This is episode 374 on the Hidden Why podcast with Rob Scott. G'day gang, welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. Lee Martinuzzi here, the host of the show, the Hidden Why guy, here to inspire you to live your life with greater passion and purpose. To do that, guys, it's really, for me, all about connecting within. It's about discovering my why and using that to develop and evolve my life compass that I can use to navigate my life with great purpose towards living with more freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. I hope by the interviews that I do here and the thoughts that I share at The Hidden Why that I can inspire you to do the same, that I can give you and share with you some insight and some value that you can take away and incorporate into your own lives. Not everything may resonate with you, but for whatever you can take away that is good for the quality of your life and the improvement and the progress, then I hope it is of value. Guys, today I'm bringing you a replay episode. It's a great episode, chock-a-block full of value, so I hope you enjoy it. Just a reminder, if you do enjoy this podcast today or any of the other ones that you might be listening to, that you could do me a favor and just share it out with your family. Share the love. You can use the Twitter link, the Facebook link, whatever other social media platforms that you prefer to share good content. Use that link, and that is a great way, a great favor to share the content here at The Hidden Why. Also, make sure you are subscribed to the podcast or whatever app you're using. Just press the subscribe button. And also subscribe to my newsletter, guys. I don't bombard you with emails. I send out one newsletter a week just to remind guests or people what shows I'm bringing about. And also a couple of little insightful and inspiring thoughts in each of those emails as well. So make sure you subscribe online there at thehiddenwhy.com. Guys, if you have any thoughts for me, any questions directly for me, or any comments about the show, you can always leave your comments in the comments field for each of the shows in the show notes. And you can also reach me through Facebook and Twitter, and also my email address, thehiddenwhyguy@gmail.com, which is available online at my website. Guys, that's really it from me. I hope you're having a great day. Thank you again for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you get some value from it. If you've already listened to it, well, perhaps you'd like to listen to it again, or maybe there's another episode that you could tune into. Guys, for whatever the case, live your life as you truly desire. Keep searching for what matters. Keep searching for passion and live your life as beautifully as you can, as happily as you can. That's what it's all about for me, and I hope you can do the same as well. Thank you, guys. We'll chat at the other end. G'day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. Today, I am pumped and excited. I have Rob Scott on the line with me. Rob is all the way from, what did you say, Rob? Birmingham?
Birmingham, Michigan, outside Detroit.
Birmingham, Michigan. So, mate, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. It's actually not Michigan, but it's close enough. Michigan, yeah. So, that's awesome. I'm really happy to be here with you, man.
Yeah, cool. So, Rob, you're a coach. Tell us a bit more about what you do.
I think the shortest way that I can put it is I cure limiting beliefs. I certainly do other things than that, but I think the fundamental thing that I do is I help people with mindset in a really profound way.
Yep.
And ultimately, it comes down to this thing I call shifting identities, right? So, and we can talk more about that if it fits, but that's what I do is I cure people's negative self-talk, self-sabotage, procrastination, limiting beliefs, all that stuff. I help people have a real consciousness shift in that space.
Which is fantastic and certainly fantastic for the audience and the show. We're all about living life with full passion and purpose. And a big part of that is to take those leaps and jumps and move away from that identity that you're actually stuck with and really finding your inner why. It's going to be fantastic. Now, Rob, I know that you've got a pretty significant story yourself behind your journey and how you've come to be. Do you want to share that with us?
Yeah, I think, a lot of ways that comes up is people will ask me, how'd you come to do this work or something, and the reason I came to it is because I was hugely dysfunctional in my own life. I was, born into a situation that was really unsafe and dysfunctional and had, addiction in it and, things like divorce and whatnot. And at a very early age, I was getting abused really badly. For years, I was being raped and went through sexual abuse and different things like that. And so I ended up with dealing with, addiction at like 7 years old. I started to play with drugs and do things like that. So,
seven years old.
Yeah, seven years old, very, very young. And so I ended up, you know, I was basically like a mascot for college kids down the street. And so I would do anything they told me. You know, they thought it was funny to give me drugs and stuff. So, but that sort of led to me being really full of shame, really full of pain, not really trusting people, not kind of having these base, you know, needs met mentally and emotionally and physically. And so, you know, a great thing to do for that is to try to feel better through substances and different things like that. So what that led to was me not really showing up for school in any way that was significant. You know, I barely went to school, even though I went to school, but I just didn't really pay attention or care about it. And I was lucky to be smart enough to kind of get through that. But, you know, didn't really do the college thing. I ended up in my late teens and early 20s, like severely addicted to very heavy drugs. And I ended up homeless. I was in and out of institutions and, you know, rehabs and halfway houses and different systems like that, jails, all that. And ultimately, you know, living on the streets. And what I woke up to was that I was carrying this really negative self-talk. I was finding a lot of my identity in this poor me. And if you think about it, it makes sense, right? I would sit down next to anybody and I was like really excited to share how tough I was and everything I'd been through. And, you know, but that toughness kind of came with a story of like, look how hard it is for me. So life kept remaining hard. And it was incredibly dysfunctional. I mean, yeah. I talk about the original dysfunction when I was young, but the things that I did later in addiction and the things that were done to me were even more traumatic. I mean, it was horrible. It was, you know, 30 years of my life, pretty much, give or take, was a really, 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 really hard road. And what I ended up waking up to was I realized that I was like carrying all this negative kind of pattern story into who I thought I was. And so what I thought was, what if I dropped all this and what if I just kind of decided to be different, decided to show up differently, didn't give as much, you know, profound power to these backstories? What if I just kind of managed my attention differently? And what I found was I was able to go from being homeless to being vice president of a company in Philadelphia within just a handful of years. And I did that with no education, no credentials, no anything. I just started to get results. And I got results for me, but I also got them for other people through being a good manager and leader and all that stuff. And so that's what I call this fundamental shift. And ultimately now my business name is called Fundamental Shift. And what happened after I became that vice president in that company, there was nowhere else really for me to go. And so on the side, I started this podcast back in like 2005, 2006. And I started to have listeners all over because podcasts weren't very popular, but there also weren't very many of them. So people that were into podcasts were, they were just finding me. And so I started to have this big audience and people all over the world, you know, about a decade ago now started asking me for coaching. And at first I really resisted it. And then I realized that it's pretty much what I was born to do. And I left that work to dive in to build this coaching business. And I just, you know, you talk about passion and purpose. I'm living through my passions and in my purpose literally every day. And I just, it's amazing. And so it's financially incredibly lucrative and I get to be just completely lit up doing what I do every day.
Helping others too, which I think is the reward, yeah?
It's the whole deal. Yeah, it's the whole deal. It's completely what I am, you know, it's what I'm here to do is to try and help other people figure out this meaning-making machine in between our ears that nobody's really giving us a user manual for.
No.
And there are very concrete ways that you can change mindset and optimize for useful thinking and just really, it's not what you think, right? It's not a belief system. It's not a certain amount of things you need to believe, but it's how you think. It's a very different way in how you think. And so, you know, my favorite piece of work that I do now is this identity shifting mastermind that I run. And it's essentially about helping somebody literally change their identity, right? So one of the stories that I like to share with people is working with a very, very heavy overweight woman. Let's just imagine maybe 100 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
And you know, when I really get honest with somebody like that and I say, like, what do you really think about yourself? And we're talking privately and she's not, you know, wearing fake smiles for friends and family. She's getting honest with me. She starts to sob and she's like, you know, I'm a big fat loser. I can't you know, do what I want to do. I keep trying to diet and I don't do that. And I keep failing. I keep failing. And so what happens there is the subconscious gets set to that identity. It gets set to, you know, I'm a big fat loser and all the things that go into that.
Yeah.
And so she can be really set to like not eat the cake and really mean that. And her conscious mind is very connected to not doing that. But what happens unconsciously is that her subconscious is trying to help her live into that belief about herself. And so she finds the next day at noon, she's got cake going toward her face, even though she doesn't want it to, and she fails again. And it just reinforces this identity of I'm a loser. And so with somebody like that, we actually create an identity of like, I'm an athlete, right? And she can be 100 pounds overweight, but actually identify as I'm an athlete. And what happens when you do that subconsciously, all the behaviors are wrapped up in that identity. So an athlete doesn't worry about if it had a little extra cake. An athlete tends to eat better. An athlete is definitely active. An athlete has gym clothes and goes to the gym. An athlete, right? Like all that stuff kind of falls in. And if you can, it's not a fake it till you make it thing. When you really shift that identity and you just wake up as I'm an athlete, you know, your life is really different from there.
Yeah, it's interesting because your subconscious, it really doesn't know what's real and what's not. Yeah, so it's you know, if you implant a different thing that's maybe not real, it can actually believe it and sort of direct it.
Yeah, and it's actually, I think that's really powerful what you just said. And so, yes, I want to honor that. But there's a different distinction that I think is really powerful for people, right? I think a lot of us are familiar with the fact that most human beings are consciously motivated by avoiding pain and moving toward pleasure, right?
Yeah.
Like that's what we think the whole motivation, all our marketing is about that. All our, you know, everything is about get the pleasure, avoid the pain, succeed, win, all that, right?
Yep.
Well, our subconscious is actually motivated, and our just whether I have to prove it here or not, the subconscious is way more powerful than the conscious mind. It's driving way more of your behind the scenes thinking and feelings and reactions and all that stuff. And so, you know, we should know that by now. But what's going on is that part of your brain is not motivated by pain and pleasure. It's actually motivated solely by survival. And it doesn't care if you're even happy or having an emotional response of bliss or anything like that. It's really just like, are we surviving? Like its base drives are trying to make it happen. So the way it accomplishes that is it really resists change because change is dangerous. We don't know if that change is going to work. That's actually a threat to the system. But what it's motivated by instead, it's to avoid pain to some degree, but to move toward the familiar. And so that's why these habitual patterns for us, these, you know, you'll have a goal and 3 years later, you still are kind of, you haven't really done much toward it, but it's still your narrative. It's like, one day I'm going to start that business or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And we're not really good at moving toward that. We're not really good at becoming an athlete normally because our conscious mind is not really running the show. It's the subconscious mind. And I'll illustrate this with another point, right?
Yeah.
Imagine battered women, right? There's this large kind of consensus that battered women so often go back to the abuser, right? And people that are healthy and away from that situation look at it and go like, why in the world are you going back? Like, just leave, go get in the shelter, stay with your mom, go do whatever. And the reality is that to a great degree, the reason they go back is that it's familiar. And because the unknown of like, how do I actually leave this man and go out into the world? That unknown is scarier than the known pain of being with that man. So we default back to these things that are familiar. So for the overweight woman, she's used to eating cake. Her subconscious doesn't care. Her subconscious is like, hey, that's what got us here. We eat cake every day for 20 years. I'm going to eat cake again today. That works. This whole diet thing, I don't know about that. I'm just going to do what works. And so these habits are really ground in. So if we're not addressing that, then change is very, very hard to make happen. And most coaches out there are really just trying to habituate one new behavior and saying, do it for 30 days and it'll go in. Well, think about that. Why did that work, right? Why did that habit work after 30 days? The reason we need willpower is to do the things that we don't think of as us yet, right? If I want to become a runner, I'm not a runner until my subconscious kind of accepts and shifts over. And at some point, if I do the habit through willpower, the reason that it worked is that something shifted in me and I go, well, I'm just a runner now. And I put on my shoes and there's no resistance anymore. And I just now run 3 times a week or
so
whatever it is.
Subconscious is now familiar with that. Yep.
Yeah. So our identity is shifting all the time, right? And some might say very often, your 5-year-old self is no longer here. Your 10-year-old self is no longer here. You're a new person. But most of the way that your identity is creating itself is based on protection mechanisms and shutting down and doing less to remain in the familiar, to stay in the safe, right? Because so much of our subconscious brain is built to remain safe and just survive.
Yeah.
And that's a very winning strategy. I'm not suggesting we should do dangerous things and not survive, of course, right? But if we look at even just the population on planet Earth, in the year 1804, I think was the first year that humanity had a billion people on planet Earth. That's only a couple hundred years ago, right? So in a couple hundred years, we've seven times ourselves. Like, survival's not the challenge that it used to be.
No, exactly. And so,
right? So we have this new access to abundance and opportunity and all these technologies and learning really fast and doing all this stuff. But our biological system, our neurology, the way our brains are set up, are wired to remain safe, to be skeptical, to be afraid of that public talk, to do all those things, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we've got to figure out a way to become more conscious then and to kind of overcome. And so that's really where I've focused the majority of my work.
Yeah, it's fantastic and you know, very interesting. I thank you for sharing your story, and there's probably quite a bit to unpack there and discuss. But you know, to go through what you went through, obviously quite a fair bit of trauma. And I believe, you know, in those younger years, that's when your neural pathways are quite heavily created. And same with those later teen years. And for you to then, you know, go about it and then make that change, I mean, that's radical, yeah? And that's something that you can obviously now share with other people on how to do that. So yes. Hopefully you can share that with us. But what was the key challenges for you when you decided at that point? What, were you about 30 years old, were you, to make that change?
Yeah, and I think I oversimplify it sometimes in the story. There was a really profound change in me at 19, where I started to understand these things, but I didn't really do the work to kind of follow it up.
Okay.
And I was very awake and understood things, but still kind of behaved badly, if you will.
Right.
And then it was probably closer to 27 or 28, so that I really started to do that corporate thing. And then what happened right after that, about a year into my corporate run, I got really sick with cancer.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up almost dying from cancer that had spread all over my body. And so, you know, so at that point, I'd really, when I came back from that, I'd now really understood what it was to be unhealthy physically, emotionally, mentally, just across the whole board, really, really dysfunctional. And, you know, I even brought back this deeper sense of like, let me really commit into figuring out success, figuring out fulfillment, figuring out happiness, because I was just so drawn to, you know, part of the pain that I went through, I had this narrative of, you know, I didn't ask to be here. Right? Like, I didn't ask to be born. I don't remember standing in line going, oh, I want to be alive so bad. And I went through all this like pain that seemed very undeserving, right? Like I didn't think I brought it on myself at 3 years old, getting, you know, assaulted and have all these things happen. I don't think I created that. Right. So I was sort of angry at the universe, you know, in a sense, sort of shaking my fist at everything going like, what the hell, man? And so there was this base sense of like anger and rage and upset. And of course I'd blame. And I'd stuff that into my shadow. And part of the meaning making happens where there's also a different part of me that's like, well, maybe I am the thing that's wrong. Maybe I'm fundamentally flawed. Maybe this is why it keeps going so badly for me. And of course, as you start to get into drugs and do that stuff, you know, your life continues to go badly because you don't have a whole lot of really successful drug addicts, right? So so waking up from that and then unpeeling levels of getting sober and sort of getting away from, you know, things that alter my consciousness and doing all that, it happened in a bunch of evolutions. But the short story was I started to be good at change. I started to be really good at self-awareness and being able to see blocks and clear them and change them. And it got to the point where it was, you know, approaching instant, right? It was just like, oh, that's a problem. Like, let me change that. And it became something I could willfully do. And so part of my management strategy was really leading other people with these, right? Helping them reshape their mindset, seeing where they were stuck and healing old stuff. And by the end of my corporate run, I had gotten my department to run so cleanly that what was going on was I had this big long line of people outside my office that were coming in to like learn about meditation or figure out what they should do in this relationship. And I didn't put it together that that was coaching, but I was just kind of answering questions. I was like helping people, right? And I started to think, I go, that's not really what I've been hired for. So, but I'm still giving value to the company. So like, is this an authentic thing to do? Like, what am I doing? And at this point I'm sober and I'm, you know, all that. Cause a lot of that corporate rise, I had given up the really heavy stuff and I'd moved into what I thought at the time was just a healthy partying kind of level. I had certain rules about what I would and wouldn't do. Yeah. But other people looked at me and they're like, how are you going to lunch and having four martinis and then like running a meeting? Like, what? I don't understand that, right? And I had the head of HR like moving my chair when I wouldn't come in till 11 just to make it look like I was there and stuff. So it was not the healthiest place to work. It was a lot of fun, but it was, you know, so getting sober in that environment and starting to go like, wow, I want to really get authentic with my mind and my consciousness. And I want to be the generation of why I'm happy, not a substance that I'm looking for. Right. I think, you know, I'm talking about serious addictions, but I think our culture and our world today is addicted to all kinds of things in greater or lesser degree, right? Our own thinking, we're addicted to coffee and sugar, we're addicted to TV shows, we're addicted to the internet, you know. And what are we doing there? Well, at the base of addiction is not, you know, we think of addiction as the heroin or the crack or the drinking or the whatever. But what addiction really is misery, right? Mm. Addiction is actually on the opposite end of a spectrum of enlightenment. Right, on one side of the spectrum is enlightenment, where every step is pleasure, where every moment is connection and bliss and whatever. Yeah. And that's not a permanent way of being. That's just a certain way we can express, you know, somewhere on the trajectory. And on the other end is absolute misery in this moment. And misery in this moment, you know, for addiction ends up looking like I need something outside myself to feel better, right? Like I don't feel good as I am. And a lot of people don't like to hear this, but many of us are addicted. It's just not quite as unhealthy. It's something that's manageable or whatever. But we're trying to get to that TV show at the end of the day because we're not happy with our lives and it just feels better to find a good season of House of Cards on Netflix or something, you know, whatever.
Hmm. And so it's an external approach to really assisting us to cover up some pain then?
Yeah, correct. Right. So we're not in our purpose. We're not connected to our passions. We're, you know, full of shame and hurt. And we've got, you know, we're embarrassed about certain things. We're not really self-aware and able to see these things and heal from them and deal with them. And so what do? Well, you know, we're taught by society that we need to buy more stuff and we need to be able to go out with the buddies and drink or whatever those things are. Right. Mm. But all of that, to what degree are you really fulfilled and happy as you are? Like, to what degree could you sit down quietly with your mind for 20 minutes and actually generate peace and calm and fulfillment, right? If you're not capable of that, then chances are you're just running around with a mind that's kind of out of control and you're not really self-aware or running your consciousness, right, any way.
Yeah.
So your mind can run you if you just let it go. Like, it will keep firing thoughts. You'll be anxious sometimes. You'll be, you know, maybe happy other times and whatever, but it kind of comes like a storm that you're not in control of at all. Or you can learn to master your mind and actually make thinking a subset of your consciousness and make it a tool. People think that we think all the time. We don't think all the time. That's not in the way that I use the word think anyway. Mm. It's not that our brain activity ceases or anything like that, but there's a very big difference between thinking and experiencing. Right. So in any moment, if I use thinking, or maybe I'm unconsciously using thinking, I'm just kind of modeling in my head and I'm thinking of different times and I'm remembering this, and then some weird elephant flies through and then I'm reminded, oh yeah, I wanted to get that cream for my butt or whatever it is, you know, like this random kind of stuff is going through. Well, that's letting thought just run our lives, right?
Yeah.
There's another side where we can actually just experience, like, what does that chocolate bar taste like? What do my feet feel like walking on the ground? What does the sound of this music sound like, right? For somebody to be intimate with their partner, right? What does that, you know, being in a sexual situation, what does that feel like? And so we're dipping in and out of experience and thought all the time, but we're not, most of us at a normal level of consciousness aren't really in control of how that's happening. So a big part of what I do is help people gain control of that and start to master their thinking and the quality of their thinking and tools that I talk about, like useful thinking instead of, you know, not useful thinking.
So I think it's what, becoming consciously aware in the moment about what you're doing, and I suppose more purposeful about what you're doing or what you're thinking.
100%. Yeah, totally. Right. So it's all about awareness and then, so, you know, there's two things that I think need mastery if we really break it down. Right. And the, historically, the East has been very good at one of them and the West has been very good at the other one. So the East for thousands of years has been studying like fulfillment and presence and meditation and that level of mastery. Right. And we've got great teachers of that, people like Eckhart Tolle or Thich Nhat Hanh or Krishnamurti or whatever, right? There's leaders in that space for sure.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. But in the world where we see all the problems around us, it's not necessarily really powerful. Individually, it's very fulfilling and freeing, and you can become enlightened and all that stuff. But you're not necessarily affecting great change in the doing space, right? But in the being space, you're mastering that to a great degree. Now, over here in the West, we're not very good at the being space, but we're fantastic at the doing, right? We send satellites around Mars, and we've walked on the moon, and we are solving diseases, and we're living longer, and we're people are making money and all that stuff. But how many of those entrepreneurs who are making tons of money, as an example, they're not fulfilled at all? In fact, they're on some trajectory that like excess and more. And if I make a million, I've got to make 2 million, right? They're grooving in this pattern of dissatisfaction, yeah. Actually. And they might be really good at creating results, but they're not happy at all.
In their own life, yeah.
Right. And so, and the coaches and the teachers in that space might be like, I don't know, Les Brown, Tony Robbins, you know, those kinds of people, right? Those coaches that help us do that. But each of those is incomplete, right? If you're good at success, but you're not fulfilled, that's a miserable way to be. And if you're fulfilled, that's probably a better way to be. But if you can't affect success, it's not very powerful, right? It's not going to really fix the problems. If you're just meditating on a stump, we usually want to do more than that. So the real mastery here is mastering both of those. We want to be really happy and fulfilled. And then we want to also be able to be in our purpose and do in a way that's really powerful and be effective and awesome at that. And when you blend those, I call that together stillness and motion, right? Yeah. So it's like this sense of presence and stillness, but you're very powerfully clear on what you're here to do, and you take more action, and all that resistance and procrastination starts to fall away. You feel confident, you can take bigger actions, and you can hold that space of fulfillment while you're achieving.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love it. I think that's a fantastic way to look at the world. And I'm certainly, an example of that, where I've been so active in doing things and trying to chase this success, but not being in that space of actually fulfillment and being satisfied with who I am and how life is actually around me.
That's an actual muscle that we can build, and it actually atrophies. For those that are just future-focused or past-focused, so if you think about time, anxiety and fear live in the future, and guilt and shame live in the past.
Yeah.
Right? And so as we're unconsciously kind of not even able to navigate away from those, we might compulsively get caught in guilt and shame, right, over our past. Like, I've done something wrong and I feel really bad about it, or I believe I've done something wrong. Or we might be really, really anxious. Maybe I'm not going to make any money. Maybe I'm going to lose this job. Maybe this business thing won't work out, whatever. Those are patterns. They're literally firing certain neuronal bundles in the brain that make a certain limbic response in your, closer to your subconscious, which starts to give off hormones of stress and anxiety in the body, right? And so literally changing that is about starting to fire new thoughts so that we fire different neuronal bundles and get a different limbic response and actually fire different hormones. And when you do that, we actually know that you can live longer. We can have two groups of people, one that feel, some level of regular anxiety in their life, but to them, the meaning of it is that it's a bad thing, right? I shouldn't feel this anxiety. Oh, why am I always so scared? Blah, blah, blah. Those people die sooner than the group of people that actually feel anxiety, but they code it differently. They talk, they go, of course I feel anxious. I'm about to give a talk. Or of course I feel anxious. This is at the edge of my, something new I'm doing. And those people actually fire different hormones in their body. They fire the hormones of excitement, whereas the other ones fire stress hormones that, debilitate and age the body and hurt them more.
Make it harder to take that step forward. Yeah.
Right. So it's literally that our thoughts go into the makeup of what the expression of our genes are, what hormones are pumping through our body, how our limbic system fires, et cetera. And I illustrate this with a story of how, if we think of like the whole universe as consciousness, right, just to use a weird word that way, like let's just say consciousness is constantly arising in whatever way that makes sense to you, right? Mm-hmm. And a rock is within consciousness, and so am I, but I'm very different than a rock. And one of the things I have to overcome that a rock doesn't is I have to deal with a bus that might run me over, or I have to feed myself, right? I've got objectives and things that a rock lying on the ground doesn't have to deal with at all,
right?
So we're clearly a different expression of consciousness than a rock. But let's talk about me versus a mouse, okay? So a mouse is also dealing with not getting hit by the bus or eaten by the cat or whatever. And it's also trying to accomplish goals. It's trying to get the cheese and feed itself and whatever, right? But so how am I different than a mouse? Well, I have a whole nother part of my brain that's going on that I don't think, I've never been a mouse, but I don't think a mouse is dealing with this.
Yep.
I have a whole thing where nothing can be going on around me at all. And yet I'm firing off thoughts that are creating that same level of anxiety of I'm getting beat up or a bus is running at me or whatever, right? Nothing happening around me, but yet the meaning making in my brain is going nuts, right? Yep. And so for most people, we're trapped in this situation where we're up late at night just worrying about the mortgage or, you know, do my kids really love me or are they going to die or, you know, like whatever those horrible things are that we're dealing with. Some people are dealing with chronic depression, et cetera, right? Mm. A huge part of that a mouse doesn't have to deal with because it just doesn't have that part of the brain. It's not evolved to get that kind of imagination and that modeling and the time base and all that stuff, right? But we have. And so this is the part of the brain that we need to figure out because it's making us literally delusional. We're actually delusional because we're thinking and worrying about stuff that's not even happening. And so what does that do? It actually, much of the time, almost manifests it happening more probably, right? Because we're worried about it, we're focused about it, we keep thinking about it. And so if I look down the hallway at my business and my boss gives me a weird look, and I just think, oh my God, my boss hates me, but people have been fired because of that panic, right? Yeah. Because they've worried about that so long. And even if your boss does hate you, it's just not a useful thought. So how can we go in and start to manage this thinking and alter it so that we're in command of it rather than the victim of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well said.
That's the game.
So how, let's go into that then for the audience listening, I guess, you know, taking that shift and changing, you know, the identity and becoming more consciously aware, I suppose. What's the steps that you go through? Can you share some insight and some advice?
Yeah, I think the three, you know, overarching steps that people need to take, whether they work with me or they do them somewhere else or whatever is, you know, first, step one is awareness. We must become aware because what's going on in our brain is we have these beliefs in the background and our beliefs are often completely unconscious to us. They're just I call them lenses, right? They're literally altering what we see. And yet if you consider a lens, they're built to be invisible, right? So if I have scratches on my glasses or raindrops on my lenses, they don't function as a lens as well. Well, our thoughts and beliefs are like that in our brain but they work like a good lens. They're invisible to us, right? So yeah. You know, so I might have a lens of I'm a loser, or I might have a lens of, you know, purple people are bad, or I might have a lens of I'm this political party and this is the only one that's right. Yeah. And we don't realize that they're beliefs because they seem like truth to us. Right. Okay. So instead of kind of wrestling with what are my beliefs and what are not, that's way too hard at the beginning. We just need to become aware of like, how are we thinking to ourselves in a way that might be holding us back? So what your listeners might choose to do, and they could do it now in the next couple of minutes, is just grab a piece of paper and write down, what are some thoughts that you say to yourself that aren't helpful or that scare you, like I'll never make money or nobody likes me or whatever. And an important thing to understand here is these are not going to be 100% true to you, right? They're, even if they're only 1% true, you still want to write them down because I'm going to suggest that there's still bad software in the system.
It's hard to actually do that sort of task, isn't it? To sit down there and write the things that you sort of believe, your limiting beliefs, I guess, because sometimes we want to avoid writing the things that we down in
we
to avoid
totally
the belief.
We totally avoid it, right? This is probably why I'm in business, because I can tell your audience how to do this right now, and most of them it'll be difficult for them to do it on their own.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to look at this. It takes a certain amount of courage, or in my case, a certain amount of pain. This is why a lot of people that go through trauma actually come out the other side kind of different, right? I call it like the gift of trauma, right? Now, a lot of people go through trauma.
I was
going
to ask you about that, actually.
Yeah.
It seems like people that go through major trauma like yourself seem to come out much stronger.
They can. They also, some of them die. I've had two best friends. Yeah, I've had two best friends commit suicide. I've been around gunfights. I mean, you know, like there's people in my life that are no longer in my life, but I know of them who are still wrestling with drug addiction and very, very low existence, right? Just, you know, check to check and living in slums and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's more rare that you come out the side. But what happens, if you can come out the other side of trauma, and anybody who's had trauma can do this, if you can decide to fix these things and heal, you come out the other side and your greatest limits become your superpowers. Actually, I was phobic about public speaking. I mean, phobic.
Right.
I don't mean anxious. I don't mean I kind of didn't like it. I would have rather taken a bullet to the face than to get up and give a talk, because my identity was such a shell and such a house of cards that was not really stable, but was trying to look good, that if I even like my voice shook just a little, this whole kind of facade of bravado and confidence was going to fall down. So, but what I found is as I've actually healed my stuff, it's now a superpower for me. It's actually like this kind of expression, talking to you. This would have been impossible years ago. And now it's something that I'm completely at ease doing. It drives my business. It helps me share my message and help other people. It's my superpower, certainly one of them. And so that's true for, you know, if you take a funny kid, where do most of our anxieties and stuck points come from? Well, if you take a naturally funny child who has a oppressive parent, and that funny child's telling jokes at night, you know, let's say that parent's even abusive, maybe they catch a backhand and say, stop being so funny, like, because we're just trying to get them to be normal. So these very special things about them, maybe a beautiful little girl gets told she's beautiful all the time, and that actually makes her want to hide because she's not comfortable with it. It's not held well. So her beauty is a superpower that gets stuffed into her shadow. This comedic child starts to shut down and be much more serious because that's the safer path. It's, he doesn't get hit or hurt or whatever, right? But when you heal, you find that this humor in that example can come out and all of a sudden be like a real cornerstone of what makes you really happy and your purpose, you know, all that stuff. Right. So,
well, that's connecting with the sort of, I feel that's connecting with your inner passion. That's, you know, perhaps been shut down, throughout your upbringing and due to
for
society,
sure,
conformity and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. I know you have a bit of an agenda toward the end of this. I want to make sure that we talk about passion and purpose, but I want to also go back and give the rest of the steps. So
yeah.
I don't want to leave a bunch of open loops out there.
So
the first part is awareness. And I want to explain that, you know, I steal a story from Tony Robbins on this because I think it's a really good illustration. So imagine that you're in a conference room and there's chairs everywhere and there's people everywhere and there's somebody on stage and there's like a camera crew in the back and it's a conference room somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden all of the lights go off. All of them. It's pitch black. There's no light coming in from the outside. There's no exit signs lit. And yet you hear somebody kind of announce, hey, please find your way to the exit, right? So now imagine in the dark with people everywhere, chairs everywhere, an environment you're not very familiar with, you try to move toward the door. Maybe you can do it, but you might like stump your foot or hit your shin. You might go really slowly. You're kind of trying to touch and see. Maybe people are panicking and bumping into you. It's not going to be very effective. But then halfway across the room, just simply the lights are turned back on. Well, that illustrates awareness. Now you're aware of all the obstacles. You're aware of the chair in your way. You can actually navigate your way to the door, right? So awareness itself, step one, if you just do that, if you just write down this bunch of stories that you're telling yourself,
yep,
just becoming aware of them,
yep,
can take them out of the truth in the background, which is like that little whispering thought, you'll never make it, or you'll never make money, or those people don't really like you, or you're not attractive, or whatever those are.
Yep.
If you just write those down and see, oh my God, these are just thoughts, just becoming aware of them can start to heal it. So that's powerful.
Turn that light on. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So next step though is, let's say you get to the door of that conference room and there's chairs piled in front of the door and you still feel you need to leave. Well, at some point, just being aware of the obstacle may not be enough, right? At some point, you may need to move the chairs. You might need to go get these chairs out of here because I gotta move forward. And so when that's the case, is this really takes the next level, which is to look at these things and have the courage to challenge them, to not accept them as true, even if they have evidence. Even if they've, you know, I have people come to me and they're like, Rob, I'm a loser. I've been a loser in eighth grade. I lost all my money. I lost my job. I lost my girlfriend. I lost both my parents. I lose all the time. And I say to them, that's great. When do you want that to not be true? Because if you're going to change, we have to get rid of that story, even if it has evidence. It's just not useful today. Because if you go into a situation going, I'm a loser, your brain is going to try to make that true for you. It's going to try to make that existing identity, that existing sense of self, be real. So you might go to the same party I go to, but you look at all the weird looks you get, and you look at how the songs aren't exactly what you wanted to hear, and you turn the meaning of that party into a loss, right? It's it lost again,
right? Your life and the attention. Yep.
And I go to the same party and I'm like, that was the best time ever. I had so much fun because I'm looking for a way to win, right?
Yeah.
And all that is happening like in your thing, right? So the second step is to look at this list that your audience has made now, and I hope they've really made it, right? They go and they make this list and then they start to challenge them and they go, you know what? I don't care. Like, I'm not a loser anymore, or I'm not a loser now, or whatever that is. You know what? People do like me, right? They start to make new choices and challenge those first choices. So I'm a loser might turn into I love when I win, right? Now, what I don't want people to do is, it's not the secret. It's not like I'm a millionaire. We're not doing that, because your subconscious is actually, it's very in my mind, irresponsible, some of those teachings where they're like, just do positive affirmations. It's not about that, because your subconscious is going to go, bullshit, that's not true, and you're not going to buy it.
Yeah,
and you're not going to change a thing, right? So we got to find, we got to craft these, and this is, again, why you want to work with somebody or why you want to do this well. But we want to find the next level that's just useful. It doesn't have to be profound and huge. It might be, you know, instead of I'm a loser, we start to go with I love when I win, right? And we do. That's true. I do love when I win. It doesn't mean I win all the time. It doesn't mean I am a winner now, because that's not going to be true either, because guess what? We all lose sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So those aren't permanent states. But what I want your mind to focus on instead, I want it to optimize to start to take on subconsciously, I love when I win, which is just a more useful thought. If you think about going into like a sales situation, right? There's two ways to go in. One is, this isn't going to work. My hands are sweating. They're going to hate me. What if they laugh? Like, if I don't get another sale, I'm going to lose all the money, right? There's that, which goes in nervous and overwhelmed and not really ready to connect and all that. Or that same person could be thinking instead, this is going to be fun. I'm just going to make some new friends. I hope this works out. Like, we'll see. I'll get to test my skills again. Like, you know, today's another day, right?
Yeah.
That second version is just a different meaning made. It's setting up a different reality, a different calmness in your body, a different way to go behave more optimally, right? So imagine if your thinking is, I'll never make the money, my wife really doesn't love me, my kids kind of don't like me, I don't have any friends, why did I choose this career, et cetera, versus, I love when I connect with my wife, my kids are amazing, I can't wait to see them keep growing up. I love what I'm, you know, I'm going to find what I love to do, I'm going to connect more and more with my passions, whatever those are, right? There's just a way to optimize that mind.
Just rewording it, I guess, as well.
Totally, right? Yep. But again, not into bullshit, but into just appropriate, useful, better thinking, right? And then the third thing is to, and I do this in my coaching, is to actually repattern that into the subconscious. So it's totally useful to do it with your conscious mind, and that will begin to affect the subconscious. But there's faster ways through things like NLP and hypnosis and patterning. I have this patterning process that I've created. When you do that, it actually switches over the subconscious so that you can go from I'm a big fat loser to I'm an athlete. In you know, like right now, right? Like you can actually change that right now.
Wow.
And so those are the steps. The first one is, you know, it's, I call it LCR, look, challenge, replace, or, you know, awareness, having the courage to challenge those thoughts or those beliefs, and then to repattern them in. And so that's step one, two, and three to doing really, really profound change in your life. And obviously there's a lot more to unpack about that, but I don't want to forget to talk about passion and purpose.
No, absolutely. Thanks for sharing those steps. And I think it's really insightful and important for the audience to go through that process and certainly write those things down, as you suggested, to become, first of all, aware. And then, you know, from there, they take those steps personally to make that change. But certainly, you know, I guess coaching, mentors, and seeking help from outsiders to help you with that process is probably very important too. Do you want to speak a little bit about that and why that's important?
Yeah, well, let me talk about two ways. And it is important. Number one, I think there's one sentence I could say that could show why that's important. For the stuff that's stuck in your shadow, for the stuff that's really in your subconscious, it's truly outside of your consciousness. So it's not like you have access to it. So I do a lot of work in shadow work, which is like Jungian shadow work. And that's not to do that a disservice of a really short description, but it's basically when we have like overwhelming experiences and emotions that we don't accept about ourselves. And so we end up projecting them out to the world. So, you know, somebody who's been raised like it's not okay to express anger, you know, hey, be more like Jesus, don't express anger. Later in life, when anger is really there, they don't kind of own it themselves and they feel like other people are angry at them, but it's really their own repressed anger that's not showing.
Right.
So people hear that and they go, oh, like I'm kind of angry some of the time. I bet I have a lot of anger in my shadow. And I would say, no, that's not it. Because if you can see it, it's not it, right? And so when you say, why should you work with somebody else, whether that's a therapist or a coach or a friend or whatever you're going to do, part of it is because you can't do brain surgery on yourself, right?
Mm.
Like you can't just start cutting into your own brain and doing brain surgery. Sometimes we need help from the outside. And so if somebody's really wanting to change and they've been struggling themselves and they want to do profound work, go get help, right? Like go get help from others. I've certainly gotten help from many mentors in my life and continue to. And, you know, that's what this work is about.
And that's certainly people too from, you know, not your friends or your family to help you, you know, gain that different perspective, I guess. It's actually using someone that perhaps doesn't know you because they're not going to have any biases then.
Truly, truly. And well, and somebody who understands this stuff and is a little bit trained would be helpful too. I mean, your Uncle Morty, you know, who's hugely addicted himself and hasn't done any personal development work, may not be the place to like set goals and work on your future, you know? one of the things I wanted to highlight too is that that process, that three-step thing, right? There's a way to really kind of spend some time looking at your biggest negative crap. And when you repattern a lot of that, profound stuff can happen. And that's something you would definitely do in a coaching context. Certainly do it on your own. You know, I give that freely. Please go do it yourself, and it can definitely work. And steps one and two alone can be a big deal. But if you do that profoundly and really repattern stuff, like, you come out a different person. Your identity really, really changes. You can optimize. And, you know, switching your identity is about, you know, it's taking something that's unconsciously happening all the time. Again, your 5-year-old self isn't here, your 10-year-old self. You're doing it all the time. You're just not doing it consciously, and you can do it consciously. So you can take that on. And if you do that in one big process, you can do a profound shift in your identity. But the other thing is just to do it in the moment, right? To gain this level of awareness, you can hear in a moment something that's not optimal in your thinking, and you can just abandon it. You can move your attention away. You can decide to move your attention to your breath, or move to a more positive thought, or whatever, and it changes the narrative.
Like in the moment, just becoming aware of it, and then sort of just questioning why you sort of think that way, and then repatterning that.
Yeah, here's a good question: like, is that useful? I don't even care if it's true. Is it useful? Right. So, man, I'm going to suck giving this speech today, and that might be happening in the background. You don't really hear it, but it's giving you, because we don't. It's hard to see our lenses, right? It's hard to see the part of our mind that's making meaning, because they're built to be invisible. What you'll feel is you'll feel the anxiety. You'll feel the meaning making turns your state different. So all of a sudden, you notice you're anxious or you're depressed or whatever. That's a good alarm bell to go, What meaning am I making? And become aware in that moment. Go, What am I doing? Oh, I keep thinking about my partner cheating on me. That's all I'm thinking about. And so right there, there could be good information if you're suspecting your partner, like maybe your intuition is onto something or whatever, and you might have, there might be something to do about that, right? You might need to hold a boundary or ask that they don't talk to that person or whatever that is, right? There may be action to take. But in the moment, if you're just mulling over it late at night instead of getting sleep, or if it's affecting your work during the day, wake up in that moment and go, is that a useful thought, right? Because I'm now just incessantly thinking like, she's cheating, she's cheating, she's cheating. Just wake up to go, that's not a useful thought, and gain the ability to move your thought. And if you do that, you become aware, and now you're not driven by these unconscious fears and patterns. And because what she's cheating is probably doing is, you had somebody in middle school cheat on you, and now you're worried about it, and you're carrying this old fear, this protection mechanism of survival, and it's no longer useful, right? It's like,
it's,
you know, and you might be like,
no.
Yeah, because, it, you know, if there's something to deal with, you might have to deal with it. If she's really cheating, you know, whatever, go hold your boundaries and whatever. That's important to do that part of it. But in the moment, do you need to be incessantly creating a biology of this limbic system firing jealousy and fear and hatred and whatever, which is just me, nothing's going on in the room around you. She's right there across the dinner table. It's not happening right now. So how can you come back and be back with your breath? How can you wake up in the moment? So you can do this as a big process with lots of these, or you can do it moment by moment. Again, walking into a sales meeting, right? Walking into a sales meeting. Oh, this sucks. I'm going to be horrible. No, I'm not. Wait a second. What if I'm awesome? You know, maybe this is going to go great. Maybe this is going to be fun, right? It's just a better, more useful thought. So start to do that, right?
So I suppose, I mean, with all this, it certainly is a practice piece. And, you know, obviously with that practice, you'll build those muscles. But for a lot of it, I think sometimes, and you might be able to help us with this, but sometimes we get, you know, pumped and motivated, and we certainly start to make that change, and then we fall off the rails again and so easily fall back into the old ways and our old, you know, beliefs and all that sort of thing. Is there a way to sort of keep on track and stay in that practice? Is it just constantly reminding yourself and constantly, you know, slapping yourself in the face every time you fall
back? So if your life is painful, the pain will be the reminder. So it's not hard to slap yourself in the face when it's painful, right? Yeah. So if your life is going well, you may kind of lose yourself in the pleasure of life. There's two things in life. And you know, I hate to keep oversimplifying East and West and these two things and all that, but I think it's useful to think about it this way. Yep. Profound change comes in two dimensions. It comes in wake up, and it comes in grow up. Okay, so the wake up part is, we need to actually have an enlightenment of sorts. We need to actually become aware. Like when I work with people and we find the thing that's stuck in their shadow, that's really been holding back, that's been in their unconscious, when they see that, there's a profound shift that requires no extra practice. Like, it's a change. They actually evolve. There's a wake up, right? There's a difference there. And when we actually instill this quality of being aware, your awareness can change without effort. Now, it doesn't, practice definitely helps, and we'll talk about that in a second. But there, if you didn't know, you know, just the act of taking on a new piece of knowledge, right? If you didn't know how to multiply numbers and then you learned how to multiply numbers, there's a permanent, you know, up-leveling of your capability in life in that. Now, are you going to continually feel blissful because you can now multiply numbers? I don't know, but you're different now, right? There's an addition, right? So this wake-up is super important. We need to learn what's going on. We need to become awake. We need to become more aware. When we do that, we wake up to a huge degree. And that's, I mean, in certain religious contexts, they call that being born again or waking up or becoming enlightened, you know, in the East, right? There's these profound shifts that take no time. They're instantaneous. And so to change you and to change your state, that's instantaneous. You can do that whenever. Hmm. But then across in life, there's also time, right? There's this ever present now. And so I could sit here and really argue the truth that there is no such thing as time, that you've never been anywhere but this moment. It's just this ever changing now, and we're always in it. So master now, right? Hmm. Like, just do that. And that would be true to, from a certain perspective, right? Right. That's, I could argue that. That's a real thing. I could say time is just a construct of thought. You know, the future is an imagination. The past is a memory. Neither of those, you can't go to either of those. You're always here. You never leave here. And there's a profound awakening to that. That's true. But then there also is time, right? I did meet you at a certain time to get on this podcast. I am going to be doing something tomorrow if I don't die. You know, I hope I'm doing something tomorrow, right? And so, how do I master this eternal moment that I'm always in? But how do I also model time and show up in that way? So one of the ways that's been explained to me, and I like to share with people, is in any moment I can help you go from nervous to confident. Mm. In any, it, that doesn't take time. That's a shift. That's an immediate thing. In any moment I can take you from jealous to calm or whatever. Now I might need to talk to you for a little while. You may hold on to the jealousy, but when you shift, it takes no time. It's like an immediate change. Okay. Yeah. So those are states and managing those. But the other thing in life are stages, and states never come in a certain order. You might be angry, then you might be sad, then you might take some drugs and have drug-induced states, and then you might dream and have some dream states, and states just kind of come how they come. Yep. But stages, no matter what stage evolution you're doing, they always come in a certain order. They always come beginner, intermediate, expert. Right. And so, you know, what I can do for you is I can say, hey, connect with your victim. Hey, connect with your hero, connect with sadness. All those we can do right now. But I can't say, hey, be concert pianist right now. I can't say become professional tennis player, because those require an evolution through the stages of beginner, intermediate, and expert. Right. So some of the games that we're playing, like building a business or growing a podcast or whatever those things are, you can't just get to expert in a moment, right? And all the promises out there that say you can, you know, immediately become a real estate mogul or whatever, those are just bullshit. You know, they're just lies, right? Because it doesn't. Now, taking on the mindset of a real estate mogul, you can do that in a moment, but then you're going to have to go through the time of actually investing in places, selling some places,